Some days are terrible, you wish that you were dead. And some days are magical, like great banana bread. Someday we'll be friends with the voices in our heads. The voices in our heads.
Hello, everybody. How you doing? We live to see another week. Congratulations on not killing yourself. You did it. Oh, man. It's hard out here for a person, huh? I was driving over today. It's a beautiful day out. It's a little chilly, but that's all right. Sometimes we want global warming when it's not here. And, you know, it was one of those days. But I was listening to, I wanted to listen to Madonna because I was walking by. No, I was running. I fucking ran, yo, on my own by myself. Because usually when I'm running with somebody else, it encourages me to run farther. I ran like 6 miles by myself yesterday. It was sick. But when towards the end of my run, there was this woman who was singing a song, and she was singing a Madonna song. I forget which one it was, but it was like a classic Madonna song. So I was like, oh fuck, I want to listen to Madonna. So on I put a Madonna Pandora on or something on my car. And then a bunch of this song came on that took me back. Oh, immediately. The Freshman. So dramatic. You know that song, Mike?
I don't think
For
so.
For the life of me, I cannot remember.
Oh,
who
yeah,
made
yeah,
us
yeah.
think that we were wise and we never compromised. The movie, yeah, Christina.
I thought it was a Madonna song.
No. It was just the Madonna radio. And then I got into like 90s shit. And then I got into grunge and I was playing The Freshman. I just loved passionately singing that song as a moody child. I had no idea what the song was about. But when he went up a key, oh, I felt it. And I got to channel my rage through this guy's rage. Or sadness. Really, it was a sad song. And then the song Lightning Crashes came on.
Ugh. Sing that one.
Lightning crashes and old mother cries. Her placenta falls to the floor. And then my favorite part. The angel opens her eyes.
I don't think I know
pale
that
pale blue color. What?
The Freshman, though, that's a vivid.
For the life of me.
It's a, I feel it. Back again.
That's like the song?
That's the Lightning Crashes.
Okay, got it.
Fucking love that song. Again, no idea what it was about. But 13-year-old sad girl Christina really took pleasure in emoting. And then The Crossroads came on by Bone Thugs and Harmony. Mm-hmm. And then I remembered how I when I bought the CD in high school or middle school, I think it was middle school, I got the CD packets. They had all the lyrics and I like diligently memorized all the lyrics to that. And then by the time the internet came around, I was like, I need to know the stories of all of the men being talked about in this song. It's a beautiful song. And I know every word still. And every time it comes on, I sing it, but not some of the words. Cause some of the words weren't meant for me. Mm-hmm. Cause some of the words should white people say?
N-O.
Nope.
No.
So we don't do that. Okay. White people. And we get off Beyonce's dick. For making a country album, because she's been country her whole life. Okay, white people, stop being racist pieces of shit. Please? We should stop being racist pieces of shit. Also, I know I've talked about this on the podcast before, but it bears repeating. I'm going to sell you on this. And I'm not trying to sell you a product. I technically am. But it's a cheap product. I'm not putting it on my Amazon thing, because that's a little sad. But floss, guys. Floss. And here's what's going to get... I know that there's crazy benefits to flossing. But that's not why I'm pushing you to do it. Why I'm pushing you to do it is do this for me. Go next time you go to brush your teeth at night before you go to bed, because I'm assuming most of you do not floss, because most people I know do not floss. Do you floss, Michael?
Not as often as I should.
So this
but
is
I
what's
have a water pick.
Oh, yeah. I heard those are good. My parents have those. This is what's going to get you to floss. Next time you go to bed, you go to brush your teeth and then floss. And then look at the floss and go, I would have gone to bed with all this shit in the middle of my teeth. And then if you want to take it a step further, this is gross. So put down your lasagna, but smell it. And if after you've brushed your teeth, you were just going to go to bed and then you floss and you go, oh my God, there's all this shit still in my teeth. And then you smell it and you're like, ugh, you'll never not floss again. Truly, you'll never not floss again. So you're welcome. Your dentist will thank me. Tell them to listen to the podcast and to subscribe to my Patreon. Patreon.com/Christina Hutchinson. Okay. You know, I'll get into the RJ Spina readings obviously at the end, but, I've been really introspective the last 5 years, pretty much. And all the self-help books that I read that I really love that have really changed the way I think, they all say the same thing, which is very helpful. But because I read so many of them and I'm constantly kind of pondering them, and I hear from you guys about your experiences, a lot of with your parents, because, you know, me too. I'm very self-aware, too self-aware. It's a little annoying, got to be honest. But one of the things that I really want to work on, that I know exactly where it comes from. We don't got to do some hypnosis session for me to find the roots of this. I get so butthurt, like butthurt, immaturely butthurt about stupid shit. Like if, and it's not usually, it doesn't really depend on me being in a certain mood. Maybe sometimes it does. Actually, yes, it does. If I haven't gotten enough sleep or if I'm hungry, I get really butthurt. But I get so easily like pissed off, and then I act really immature about it. And I notice, because I'm so self-aware, I go, oh, Christina, you're doing that thing that your mom did. My mom would get so butthurt about things. And then she wouldn't talk to me. I'd be like, oh, if I would do something to upset her, I wouldn't realize it. And then I would go, hey, mom, so what do you want to eat for dinner? And she would just give me a silent treatment. And I'm like, well, this is hell. This is a fresh hell I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy. And this is going to give me some fucked up problems when I'm an adult. I didn't know that part yet, but that's what it was. But I'll get like, if I don't feel like appreciated in a way that's, there's ways that you can, yes, I don't feel appreciated. So we handle it a certain way, right? We handle it in a mature way. But do I handle it in a mature way? No, I just go, no, I just do things for everybody and no one gives a shit. They just walk all over me like always. I turn into Eeyore, absolute Eeyore. And I'm like, oh my God, Christina, shut the fuck up, dude. Shut the fuck up. But the thing about being butthurt, I catch myself in it and I feel it in my body because I'm trying to implement all these tools that I'm gaining from these books. I really try it. And I feel like I'm getting, but like this morning I got a little butthurt because I didn't feel like I was doing something and it was messing up my day, but it was a favor for somebody that I love. And I didn't feel like they were thanking me properly. And I was being a cunt. And by saying, when I say a cunt, I was just being short. I'm not usually short with people unless I'm in a rush. But, and then I'm like, Christina, don't like stop. But I felt it in my body because all these books are like, feel where the sensation lives in your body. And then allow the butthurt to pass through your body. And then it washes away and you're not butthurt anymore. Well, I did that. I located it. It's right here below my tits. Still butthurt. Still butthurt. So when does it wash away, God? I wish there was a genius bar that we could go to for our psyches, that we could just walk in without an appointment and we could say, fix this. Fix it. But also the thing with butthurt that I notice that I try to call myself out on my own bullshit. Cause believe me, I got a lot of it. And so do we all. It's all different flavors. But with my flavor, I will get so annoyed by people that get butthurt and act immature about it and don't actually communicate what they mean. And they just freeze. And they're just like, well, it's fine. I'll be like, what is your problem? Why are you like this? But really I'm just yelling at myself. And it made me, I was scrolling past Instagram and there's another thing that, coaching with Brooke gave me to use as an excuse, and blame it on ADHD. But she talks about this thing and I don't know, man, I don't, maybe I'm misinterpreting her goal with this post. But we're given labels to everything. And I don't think it needs a label. Like we could just recognize that we do it. And then we got to figure out how to stop doing this. It's very helpful to know the root of why you do that. I already know the root. My mom got butthurt. Now I get butthurt. I'm going to fix it. Trying. But this says, here's a few scenarios of what rejection sensitive dysphoria can actually look like in real life.
God.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, dude, just say butthurt and say, stop acting like a little bitch baby. Because that's what would actually help me, to be honest. And I'm very sensitive. I'll probably get butthurt when you tell me that, but then I'll think about it and go, yeah, you were right. But okay. Feeling rejected when they don't match your energy in conversation. That can be classified, or that's what rejection sensitive dysphoria can feel like. Feeling rejected when they don't match your energy in conversation. And I read that. I'm like, oh, get the fuck over it. But you know what? Now there's just a reel in my head playing to all the times that people didn't match my energy when I came in all excited and happy. And then they were like, hey, and I'm like, yeah, hey, now I'm butthurt. So, oops. It's ADHD, guys. It's not my fault. There's a this next slide is a cartoon of a couple watching television in their living room. And I guess the guy says, can we pick something else? And then Brooke writes, feels like you're dumb for liking this and assuming I would too.
Oh my God.
Fuck off, dude. Relax. Get over yourself. Like, that's not. But look, you got to point it out in order to fix it. So hopefully this post is to point it out for her to point it out so that people can fix it, not make an excuse. Because you don't want your partner to cater to your butthurtness. What kind of relationship is that? Challenge me, bitch. I'll get butthurt about it, but later it'll be better.
Also, just like get over it.
I know. Truly get over it.
Change the channel. There's like a term for it. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. It's like, oh, and sometimes I used to get so much more butthurt than I do. So I am making a lot of progress. God bless like Corinne Fisher, that poor woman. Oh, she got put up with me getting taken so many things personal that were not personal in any way. I owe her many apologies for the next 18 years. Because I look back and I'm like, damn it. I was acting exactly like my mom did. Fuck. So this next slide, she says, fear of showing your work because you think someone else could do better. That one I've never experienced because I'm like, well, if I didn't do a good job, then let's look at why. But that also is, I don't know how I feel about that slide. And then the next slide, there's a guy working at his computer and there's a little word bubble with scratches. And then he's thinking of, I guess, his friends at a picnic. And it says, feeling abandoned because they didn't invite you to something. Dude, I would get so butthurt. The most butthurt I would get, the highest levels of butthurt is when I got left out of stuff. And I got left out of things a lot in middle school and high school. I had a friend group in middle school. And I look back like one time, dude, oh, I wrote so many diary entries about this. We would all have sleepovers often. And the three of them, there was a group of four of us. The three of the girls lied and said that they were going home and then they dropped me off and then they went and had a sleepover. And I don't know, I think I found out through Zenga or something like that. And I dwelled about that for years. But then I look back and I'm like, I was so traumatized as a teenager and I did not know that I was acting, I was acting weird. And the kids were responding to me acting weird. Like a lot of kids, like I had friends, but then they didn't want to hang out with me all the time because I would just be erratic and weird. And now looking back, I'm like, oh, that's why. And
I had this too.
Really?
There's a famous story of me with my friends that I grew up with.
Do tell.
Of me just being a baby, basically.
Oh,
we had, and they knew this, and they would fuck with me because they knew they could like get to me.
Oh, that's so mean.
So, do you ever play the board game Risk?
Yes.
So, game of world domination.
Yes, absolutely. It takes a long time, but it's nice. I love the strategy involved.
Very long game. Awesome game. And we were playing this game of Risk. It was me and my one person who's still my best friend to this day, Evan, aww, shout out, and two of our friends from growing up. And they knew that, so Evan, like, we made an alliance. So we were like going at like our other two friends or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And this whole time we're like playing and I'm like, I'm probably like talking like shit and stuff like that because we're winning. And then Evan turned on me.
Evan!
And I freaked out. And I like, turned the board over.
Oh, I've done that.
And I like called my mom to come pick me up.
Oh, that's real bad.
Yeah.
That's a real bitch move.
And they were all laughing at me the entire time.
Oh,
they were
like, no, what? That makes it so much worse.
They're like, what are you doing?
Did that make you more angry?
Yeah. I just was acting more and more like a baby because I was just like, you know, I felt slighted and there was no reason to feel slighted. So I called my mom to come pick me up.
Oh, no. How old were you? 13, 14?
12. Yeah. Like 12, something 12. Like around there.
Yeah.
And my mom picks me up and she's like I told her the story of what happened because I called her in a huff, you know?
Yeah.
And she picked me up and we got like halfway back to like our apartment. My mom was just like, you have to go back there and you have
to.
Yeah. My mom was like, you have to like go apologize to these guys.
And, that's incredible.
And just not be a baby because you're going to get made fun of forever.
What
and
she was right. Mom.
I went back there and I was like, I kind of like, you know, and they also were like, listen, man, we were just fucking around. But like for you to do that is just nuts, you know, and it just remained this like, and we like kissed and made up. It was all fine. But
wait,
like,
you kissed?
No, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
we like I mean, made up and it was all good. But my mom forced me to go back because she was like, you're going to lose these guys as friends because they're going to think that you're the biggest baby. Like you look insane right now.
Wow. That is an example of a good parent.
Yeah.
That's some good parenting.
She didn't even get me all the way home. She was like, you have to go back.
Wow. This is insane.
I'm going to just drop you off. Go talk to them. Because this is crazy.
So this is one of the reasons why you handle shit well. Yeah. Even like super stressful situations that would ruin a lot of people. It's because you had a sense of self-esteem because your mom was like, nah, stop that shit. Go apologize. Like, be a person. Be an adult.
Because, well, I mean, and looking back, the situation was so ridiculous.
Yeah.
And like, I think I was ashamed of how I acted the second I left.
Well, and you got the
being a baby.
Yeah. And you got but your mom forced you to take the opportunity to make up for that.
Right.
To save your own reputation with yourself. Right.
So now it just remains this like silly story of like, remember that time you freaked out over that game of Risk?
Hilarious.
you fool. you know?
Oh, that's sweet. Sweet. Yeah. Well, I told my mom that the three girls had a sleepover without me. She, because she was the one who taught me to get butthurt to begin with. She was like, oh my God, honey, that's awful. and we both felt sorry for me together.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm like this. Okay. I get it. She didn't have the tools to figure out how to not get butthurt. But my God, you know, I got so butthurt. But yeah, I was, when I think back to all my diary entries, I'm like, oh, that's why the kids were weird to me because I was being weird. Makes sense. All right, let's look more with this coaching with Brooke. So we can get more excuses for our behavior. But yeah, it feels terrible to be left out. Oh my God. And when you feel like I would always think people are ganging up on me when they're not. It was a nightmare to be around. So this is a picture of a text message where a person says, okay. And then the other person responds, ... you're sure. And then Brooke writes, feeling heartbroken when they leave you on read and don't use their usual emojis and punctuations. Now, when I initially read that, I'm like, what the fuck pussy ass bitch has that reaction? Me. Mm-hmm. Me. Christina Marie Hutchinson has that. When somebody doesn't, they usually use the exclamation points and they don't. Now, I don't take this the next step and act on it. I just get the progress here is, one, I'm getting butthurt less, but two, the butthurt that I still get, I'm getting it in my head. I'm not actually saying anything. Well, maybe I'm acting a little standoffish, but only for a little bit. So I don't actually say like, we should have a conversation about this because that's what I usually would say. And it's not good. Now, the next slide is a bunch of people talking in a business meeting. They're on their laptops at a table. And she says that gut churning feeling when no one acknowledges what you said or laughs at your joke. It's heartbreaking. It's fucking heartbreaking, man. Oh, it's awful. When you say you feel so stupid. Oh, and you're like, I'm just a dumb idiot. I should shut up and go in a turtle. I wish they made turtle shells for humans because I would just live in it forever. I can feel so sorry for myself that I won't talk for 48 hours. That's happened one time when I first started working with my manager, Rick. We first started chatting when Guys We Fucked was popping and all these managers were like, Christina. And I was like, what, guys? Like, what do you want? And he was chatting and he had a lot of incredible clients at the time and still does, me being one of them. And so he arranged for the entire company to go see me at Caroline's on Broadway, RIP Caroline's on Broadway. She didn't die, but the club doesn't exist anymore. But they made the whole company come out. They put me up on the show, 7 o'clock show. It was all old, like elderly people, which was not my crowd. I was not good at stand up yet. And I was easily susceptible to being negatively affected by feeling nervous. I bombed so hard that I just left the club, did not talk to Rick, just left after the whole company came out and I didn't speak for 2 days. I went to the liquor store. I got an airport bottle of liquor. I went to drink it. And then I remembered like, my stomach's too sensitive. This isn't the road. So I was like, I'm just going to go see if I have any weed crumbs in my carpet. And I went home and smoked them and didn't talk for 2 days because I was butthurt because I was so ashamed. Okay, this next slide, don't worry, there's two more. Two people talking to each other in this quote, it hurt my feelings when you said that. And she says, sometimes hearing that can feel like you are evil and have done irreparable damage to me. And again, I read that slide and I'm like, oh my God, get over yourself. But you know who said that? You know who's taken things to that level? Your girl, okay? It's not fun. It's not fun. Let's see what people say in the comments. RSD has always seemed to me to be a fairly universal human experience. Thank you, Luke, rather than an ADHD specific thing. Okay, good. I'm glad she's getting called out for this because I'm like, lady, look, it's great that you want to coach people with ADHD. And a lot of people have ADHD just because they grew up in a traumatic household. So that's cool. So it makes sense that it is prevalent. However, not everything's ADHD. You know, sometimes you just got to woman up or man up or they them up, you know? It's also not recognized as any part of the ADHD diagnostic and isn't recognized in the DSM. It would be hard to find anybody who doesn't loathe and fear rejection. I mean, yeah, I think she's right. Or Luke, sorry, I accidentally credited a woman with saying that. All right, so after you floss and after you've blamed everything on ADHD, get this quote. I'm pretty sure I didn't share this quote last week. And if I did, because I've been talking to a lot of people about this quote, if I did, Michael, please let me know. And I will embarrassingly ask you to edit this out. Mm-hmm. But I finally found a quote that genuinely makes me not want to get mad. Like I'll go to get mad. But first of all, I didn't get mad one time driving here from my apartment. Yes, it's a 15-minute drive and it's 1.2 miles. However, did it not get mad one time. There's a lot of stop signs and it's Williamsburg. There's a lot of double parked cars. Didn't get pissed off once. Did not honk my horn. I was so proud of myself. So I found a quote. I don't even remember who said it because I'm reading too many authors. But this finally, I've been looking for this quote. I didn't realize it my whole life. Anger can oftentimes be the ego's substitute for courage. Let that fucking sink in. Yep. And when I would say when you throw in that board game, your ego was substituting courage for anger. You weren't courageous at all in that moment in any way.
But I thought that I was the hero of the situation.
I really the ego did. Was in charge. That's the ego, baby. It's a liar. It's a two-faced fucking liar. Yeah, anger, not all the time. Because anger in the face of social injustice, I think is a very necessary thing. So never stop being mad about that. However, there's so many times in one's life, i.e. when you drive, getting road rage, where you just, I'm like, what can I replace instead of this anger? You know, because I get mad when somebody does something stupid, like cut me off without using a blinker. Shame on you. And where do I put that anger? But then when I think of the anger as a substitute for being courageous and just letting it wash over you, because that's the courage. Sometimes it takes courage to not be angry. Yeah, right? Yeah, I'm real brave like, okay? I stopped really watching television. I had a live TV add-on for my Hulu subscription and I canceled it because I'm trying to make my monthly costs a lot lower. Fucking fantastic not having cable. Oh, it's great because you watch other shit. That's more interesting, frankly. I've been watching a lot of YouTube. And there's this show on YouTube of this guy. It's he has this really hacky bit where he has a CGI fish in a fish tank next to him. The set is really good. It kind of looks like this set, but he ain't got those titties. The guy just talks about paranormal stuff. So like aliens, conspiracy theories, basically all the topics that I get excited about that I like to cover on Wait What? And so he did an episode on Edgar Cayce, who was a famous psychic. And he had all these predictions in the 1930s. A lot of them were false and they were, a lot of them were generic. And people were like, all right, dipshit, like you got to be more specific than that. But one that he made in the 1930s that was very specific, that was true. He said the 44th president of the United States was going to be black. That is mad specific. Okay. And it came true. Barack Obama, baby, 44th president. He also went on, because I went to look up a little bit more about that. He also went on to say that a black man being elected to office, I don't think he said man, but I think that was implied because it was the 30s and they're like, women aren't going to even be nurses by the time 2000 rolls along. But he said that that would start like basically World War III in a nutshell. I'm paraphrasing. He said that would cause a lot of people to be mad because it's America and there's a lot of racist pieces of shit in this town. It's how easily we forget living in New York City. And I thought that was very interesting. And another far off prediction that this guy was talking about on his little YouTube show was that the Earth is in for a catastrophic event when the world's going to go through a pole shift. So apparently the planet goes through pole shifts often. And a lot of times, like Pangea, where it was just, I guess at one point the world was just like one giant continent and then something happened and then all the continents spread out. Apparently that was a pole shift. So when the poles shift, the Earth just gets fucked and everything floods and all this crazy stuff happens. So there's going to be a pole shift between 16 and 20 degrees, he said. When both Mount Etna and Mount Pelee erupt at the same time, which are two volcanoes that are currently active. Mount Etna did erupt very recently, but Mount Pelee did not erupt. So, but he said when that happens, we'll have 90 days to evacuate all the coastlines. He said about like 50 miles from the coastline. So she's going to be underwater.
None of that would actually shock me, to be honest with you.
Me either. Because
warming is getting wild.
Yeah, it's getting pretty. Those hurricanes were like, oh, damn, yeah. Word. So Miami's just legit under an inch of water. Like currently, we don't even got to wait for that. Yeah, the hurricanes are wild. But I'm remembering fondly now on Hurricane Sandy. I do love a catastrophic weather event, not because it kills people. I don't like that part, but because it's so exciting. Like when Hurricane Sandy was happening, I'm like, you guys, this is so exciting. Like we don't know what's going to happen and it's pretty bad. And Mother Nature, she's a humbling lady, Mother Nature. And I remember I told Corinne to come over to my place. I was living with Steven at the time. Big mistake, because that's when I found out Steven held on to his porn star ex-girlfriend's butthole fleshlight in his office. And I found out that when our downstairs was flooding with 3 feet of sewage water and I went to the closet and I thought it was a flashlight and I went to use it and it was a butthole. Corinne was there for that. Again, Corinne, very sorry that you, man, I can't believe you stuck with me, girl. That's really says a lot about you. But I remember at one point we were trying to make like comedy videos in the hurricane and we walked to First Avenue. I was living on 34th between 1st and 2nd. First Avenue was a river. There were newspaper stands floating down First Avenue. And I was like, I don't know if I'll ever see anything like this again. This is incredible. And I was just I couldn't sleep. I was so excited. Even when my apartment started flooding, I'm like, I mean, whatever. It's just stuff. But like, what, guys? And then the blackout below 39th Street, all the lights went out. And so we had to go to Steven had a van at the time. And we parked it at a parking garage on like the 5th floor. And we had to make our way down to the East Village with flashlights at night outside in New York City. I was like, I remember every second of that walk. I was like, I'll never forget this. This is incredible. It's like I'm living in a movie. I loved it. Loved every second of it. When a tornado warning would happen in Virginia, when I lived there, I was like, you guys, this is so thrilling. I want to go tornado chasing. I'm going to do that next summer. There is a study. Wait, let me get this graphic up because I don't want to misquote. There's a study happening. Which poll? The Gallup report. That's a pretty legit one from what I understand. Gen Z is officially for the girls, gays, and theys. According to a new Gallup report, almost 30% of Gen Z women identify as LGBTQIA+, with bisexuals accounting for a whopping 20.7% of that number. As for millennials, only 12.4% identify as LGBT. That's a huge jump. So millennials are 12.4% LGBT and Gen Z is 30. I wonder why. You know what time it is, guys? It's time for some fuckboy theater. Let's figure out why Gen Z is so gay. Why don't these women want to date men? What's wrong? What could be the problem? Well, let's explore that, guys. So I'm just going to read one little quick prompt. This is girl's Hinge profile. She sent me a screenshot of one of the answers that she chose to, one of the questions she chose to answer, which was my biggest date fail. She put in here, going out with a guy that just wanted to suck my toes, shrug emoji. And then this guy, I don't even know how to pronounce his name, so I'm not going to try. But he responded to that prompt. Do you know what he said? Well, first of all, his picture is in a BMW convertible. And I got to say, I do know there is one person that is an exception to this rule. So I don't want to make a generalization, but I'm going to make a generalization with this one person aside. If you drive a BMW, you're usually an asshole. Asshole. Okay. I know that anger is the ego's substitute for courage, but Jesus Christ, people who drive BMWs are rude. They're very rude and I don't like it. So he's in a BMW and he responds to that prompt by saying, I can already imagine that he made a huge mistake by not going for the tits. I would suck on those puppies all night. And scene. And you know what the tragedy of this is? The greatest tragedy? This guy that said that, he's good looking. Guys, it's so rare that you're good looking. Don't waste it on being a piece of shit, okay? Because my God, what a blue ball that is for us, okay? When a hot guy reveals himself to be a fuckboy, an angel cries because one of its wings just got chopped off with a with an axe by a mean man in a BMW. Okay? Don't be a piece of shit. Oh my God. Before I get into the RJ stuff, I was on the phone with Delta. I was on hold because I had to change my flight. I'm going to Missouri this weekend. It's after this episode comes out. So hopefully you came. And if you didn't,
fuck you.
But I had to call Delta because I looked at my flight that I had booked. $600 to go to Springfield, Missouri. Not a fan of that, but such is life.
Yikes.
Yeah, it was dumb. Make it worth it. I hope people show up.
Springfield, that's not a $600 flight city.
Nope, that is not a destination anybody would want to spend more than $70 to get to from anywhere in the world. I've never been there, so hopefully it's a nice town. I heard the club's really sweet, the Blue Room. But I was on hold with the lady in Delta. I was trying to get an earlier flight back because I was like, you got to get me out of this town way sooner. I accidentally booked a night flight on Sunday. What? No, get me out of there at 6 a.m. And I had to pay $100 more. That's a $700 trip. So make it worth it, Springfield. Hope you did. But I was driving with Colin. He was driving. I was on the phone with Delta. And Colin was telling me about in between me asking the lady for the earlier flight. I thought she was like looking up something to like make sure I could get on the earlier flight. And then Colin was telling me about a person that he knows who's one of their parents killed themselves. And I was like, yeah, that's really tough. I was talking to somebody the other day whose parent killed themselves, I was making it real about me, but it was a private conversation that I'm publicly sharing. I said something like, yeah, man, I mean, that's the more people I met whose parents killed themselves, the more I'm like, man, my mom just dangled that in front of me my whole life. And it's like, ugh, so much less respect for a parent who like tries to kill themselves and doesn't and use it as a manipulation tactic. Not that killing yourself is ever good. Anyway, the woman was waiting for me to answer her that whole time that I went on this rant about parents committing suicide and why and when they're manipulative about it. And I feel like she's going to have a dinner table conversation topic for the next 7 months. I really went hard because I thought I was on hold. And she was like, excuse me, ma'am, is this flight okay? And I was like, oh, shit. I'm so sorry, girl. You just listened to me talk about some real dark shit. Sorry. And I wasn't being funny about it, but I was being a little jokey because it was my boyfriend and I talking, you know? The beauty of a relationship is you could say things in weird fucked up tones with each other because you get each other because you're not going to cancel each other because, you know, you get where the other person's coming from. But I did not mean for that conversation to be heard by the woman on Delta. So my apologies, ma'am. My apologies. Sorry, I just called you ma'am. That's another apology for that. Just doling out apologies, guys. They're signs of strength. Apologies. Okay. Okay. So I'm very excited about today's reading. From Supercharged Self-Healing, the Revolutionary Guide to Access High-Frequency States of Consciousness that Rejuvenate and Repair. So now we're getting into the good stuff. And if you haven't heard, I'm going to read a couple pages of each chapter on here, and then I'm going to finish the rest of the chapter. Sometimes I'll do it a bonus extra chapter on my Patreon. And there's a level called Just Here to Listen, $5 a month. That's it. I know we got so many subscriptions, but this one is helping a gal out that you like. So maybe do it. Patreon.com/Christine Hutchinson. The rest of this chapter reading by the time this episode airs will have already been up on Patreon. And you can sign up for a free trial, but I think it's only 3 days. But if you want to binge all of them in 3 days and then just cancel it, you absolutely can. I fucking do that. I'm not above that. But this is a really good chapter. So this is getting into like the good stuff. And I'm only going to read a couple pages of it because it's a long one. I'll read the rest on the Patreon. But he gives you some exercises in the end of this chapter that you're not going to hear, but I am going to give you one of them before we leave because it's very potent and it's very immediate and your girl loves that. Okay. So I want to give that to you. Okay. So this next part of the book that we're diving into is called Part 2, Ascend the Frequencies Healing Technique. Now, this is the technique that this guy, RJ, used to completely heal himself from chest down paralysis and being on death's doorstep. Okay. And all the doctors, they meant well, hopefully. And they said, sorry, dude, you're going to die, basically. And he was like, no, I'm not. Can you close my door? BRB, in 100 days, I'm going to be walking. And he was. So this is getting into like what he actually did. And it's very potent and very exciting. Very exciting. So step one, access your true essence. This is the step one of the Ascend the Frequencies healing technique, okay? Who, or more accurately, what is the real you? No idea, RJ. Been trying to figure that out for 36 years. In part one, we established that we're not our physical body, and we're also not our ego mind identity, which is the conceptualized character we create with whom we misidentify our immortal selves. So again, it doesn't hurt. Remind yourself of this every day. This is what I say to myself every day. I am not Christina. I am sentience. And this go around, this little lifetime that I chose to do, right now I'm playing the role of Christina Marie Hutchinson. Big titted, funny podcaster. While this is a simple truth, the finite human mind will do its best to stop you from embracing it. Non-acceptance is how the belief-based egoic identity protects itself from demise, because self-awareness exposes the false self for the parasite that it fucking is. Okay? So whenever you feel yourself pushing up against the concept, that's your ego, boo. That's your ego, boo. Okay? Go, hey, ego, I see you. The finite and conditioned human mind is separation, division, compartmentalization, and memorization. It does this endlessly with everything, including to itself, through nonstop analysis and judgment. Ugh, I know, it's so exhausting. It operates more like a parasitic virus trying to divide, conquer, and subdue its host. Take me out to dinner before you subdue me. Jeez. It perpetually separates and therefore can never see unity when it looks within or at the world. That's why so many people are just racist pieces of shit. Your egoic identity is disharmony itself and can only produce further disharmony. Cute. It woefully lacks any authentic power, and it's why we cannot heal ourselves or evolve our sentience while in servitude to it. Like a computer virus, your limitation program is always running as your default setting, but you can override that, bitch. Sentience, which is what we really are. So you listening to this right now, remind yourself, you are sentience. It's always aware. It commands energy into your mental body, which produces the phenomenon called thinking. Now get this, get this. Thinking is simply the movement of the past. Thank you. That was RJ's words, not mine. One cannot be the awareness of thoughts and the victim of them at the same time. Oh, hit me where it hurts, RJ. This is simply impossible. What actually happens is we lose the self through misidentification with the creation of thought. So that's why we talked about earlier, and I've talked about this before, when you over-identify with any of your identities, like even me, like if I over-identify as a comedian, I'm not a comedian. And he has such a good example that we're going to get into very soon about this. You choose your feelings just as you choose your thoughts. You may not consciously be aware of this because your deep programming, born of the reactionary state of your belief-based egoic identity. Think of it this way. The belief-based egoic identity judges and reacts, while sentience observes and responds. Those words, they feel a lot different. The egoic identity must react because it misidentifies itself with the experience. Hence, we become a victim, there's that fun word, to our creations, as well as other people's creations. This is why you may struggle with control of emotions, Christina. Okay, RJ, get off my dick. This also provides a glimpse into how disharmony manifests within our body of originally pure energy. Sometimes you choose to watch a scary movie so you can experience the thrills and chills. But if you just observed the movie in a detached state, you would never get scared by what's on screen. Oh, that reminds me, every time I watch a scary movie, I just get so into the movie that I'm like lost in the world of the movie for the next 2 hours after the movie ended. It's kind of fun. You choose to read a romantic novel to experience passion and desire. You choose the feeling you want to experience by what you reach for, but you eternally remain the awareness of it all. Ooh, that's an example that I totally understand. And just like thoughts, because you are aware of feelings, you cannot be your feelings. That's such good news. So I am not my anger. I am the one who's aware of it. And how it's pussy ass bitch move. You are the sentient awareness that commands the energy within your larger body of energy in order to experience these temporary creations. You are always aware of what you feel. Isn't it exhausting? Which also makes being the feeling impossible. And this is exactly the shit that Michael Singer said in The Untethered Soul. I am not my emotion. How can I be my emotion? I'm the one that's aware of it. Oh, bitch, what up? Thinking that you are the feeling is also a product of deep-rooted misidentification. Just like thoughts, if you were your feelings, when they pass, you would pass too. Sometimes that sounds nice, but it's not overall. Yet you remain right here with me right now. Let's look at the monumental gulf between being and identifying. This is a good example. I love this one. For example, when I say I love drumming, I instantly connect with the feeling of unlimited creative musical expression. the joy of rhythm that flows through my entire being, and the internal freedom I experience when I'm open to inspiration. It's pure joy, and time literally ceases to exist. Yes, give me that flow state. In comparison, when I say I am a drummer, I immediately feel the weight and responsibility of what being a drummer means to me as a belief or concept. Oh, such a good example. A previous mental and emotional placeholder now has to be lived up to. Am I good enough to call myself a drummer? Should I be able to play for money? Will other people think I'm good enough to call myself a drummer? Shouldn't I know more patterns, techniques, and time sequences? The moment I misidentify myself as a drummer, joy and freedom are replaced with the conceptualized mental responsibility and emotional weight associated with the concept of what it means to me when I say I am a drummer. While I love drumming and I am a drummer seem similar, they are different forms. They are the difference between freedom, joy, and unlimited creative expression, and onerous, confining responsibility of a role. Oh, that shit slaps for me. Okay. That really, because now when I talk to people, I love, when I read that, I was like, fuck, I'm going to talk to people in a totally different way, because I totally feel the stress of when I say, even I do this all the time with projects. I fucking put the cart before the horse. When I start on a project, I tell people that I'm doing it. And then they're like, oh my God, that's so cool. That's really exciting. And then I feel so much pressure that I don't do it. And it's, I become a fainting goat. And so, well, one with that problem is just don't talk about it. But like with the drumming, I am somebody who has been taking drum lessons for about a year, but I don't say I'm a drummer. Number one, because I'm not, but two is because he's exactly right. Now I feel all this pressure. And then what is somebody going to ask me to play? I had a woman email me asking me to play, who's in a famous band. I got to email her back. Whoops. That was in October. And then I'm like, I can't play. I'm not good. I'm not good enough. So immediately me saying I'm a drummer, there's all this pressure. But if I just say, oh, I really love drumming and I'm taking lessons, that's it. That's such a better way to talk about it, because it's freedom. Transitioning from being to identifying happens nearly instantaneously due to the control your egoic identity has over your beingness. Ew, get out of here. Detachment or pure observation is required to tangibly and experientially know the difference. Identification suffocates imagination. Houston, I repeat, identification suffocates imagination. Oops, lost my page. Give me a second. It's going to take a while. Whoops. Okay. But that's so true. It's so true. And that's why, like I said a couple episodes ago, thinking is resisting. That is so true. When you sit and try to think, oh, I'm going to make a new brilliant hour of stand-up, nothing's going to come to you because you're trying to force it. You know what I mean? So again, identification suffocates imagination. What a good, good sentence. It enslaves your sentience, imprisoning its freedom and supernatural ability to endlessly create harmonic perfection in its limitless fashion. Once incarnate, your primary creation born of misidentification, which we all have, the ego mind identity, is the entire cause of your suffering. Found it. What you really are is simply too large, limitless, perfect, and divine to fit into the totality of all beliefs, concepts, and ideologies. See, now that should be on a Valentine's Day card. Many of my students quickly grasp that they are not their thoughts, but struggle with the emotion part. Many say, I can't help but feel how I feel. Well, for now, you can't help feel how you feel because it's part of the limitation program of who you think you are and remember and how you feel about yourself. This is how the ego identity works. Remember, you are the awareness of everything, not what you are the awareness of. The ego identity creates and experiences life through a conglomeration of past stimuli that you misidentify as the self. Wow, God really doesn't want me to talk today. One second. Me. RJ's words are really getting to me. Okay. Mistakenly, you identify these with transitory phenomena and believe in their authenticity and permanence, meaning emotions. The disharmony leads to all disease and disrepair because all disharmony is created through disharmonious thought patterns. That's why, you know, a lot of times when you're having a bad day and someone or like you have a medical diagnosis or anything bad happening and people are like, cheer up, like, fuck you. But also, yeah, that would kind of fix it. They are, okay. So your ability to perceive beliefs, thoughts, emotions, and the body and its experiences means they're not you. They are all projections, while you, which is sentience, are the pristine creator and awareness of it all. Sentience gives depth, context, and understanding to every single moment of your entire existence, incarnate or not. In truth, we're observing our human experience when we play with our pets, talk with our friends, go out to dinner, or play an instrument. Otherwise, without our perpetual observation, how would we know that anything is taking place? Now, I can't think about that sentence more than 5 seconds because my brain explodes. You are not the thought, feeling, action, hope, expectation, belief, body, or ego identity. Therefore, you are not who you think you are or how you feel about yourself. Isn't that good? You're not how you feel about yourself, boo. I can't imagine if you're listening to this podcast, you might not feel great about yourself. I mean, hopefully you do, but odds are there's a chunk of you that don't. But hey, guess what? You're not how you feel about yourself. RJ said it. So that means it's true. You're way beyond all of that. Sentience is immortal creator awareness given energy to work with. Sentience has the desire to know and evolve itself. The human experience is simply one way sentience accrues and deepens. Because that's all, that's the point of being here, apparently, from what I've gathered. You're here to have a human experience. So your sentience, which is high vibration, goes, all right, I'm going to incarnate into this body. I'm going to be these two people's kids. And I'm going to be this gender. And I'm going to have this shit to work on. But you have to lower in vibration. That's why this whole ascend the frequencies healing technique, it's called that because your sentience has to basically dim its light to be a person. And so he's trying to teach us how to make that light shine bright like a diamond so we cannot be paralyzed no more. Okay. Once a belief-based habitual mental construct of who we think we are and how we feel about ourselves has been formed, we run this limitation program with every stimulus, including people we encounter thereafter. That program runs by thinking. For example, when information, which is sensory perceived data, is aligned with our belief-based programming, we welcome it on board and work with it. Oh, this example really hits. When somebody expresses an opinion that backs up a belief you identify with, like when you hear that someone you already don't like did something bad that you didn't know about. I'm already getting excited. You then use this new information as confirmation bias or proof that your belief is true. Ooh, call me out, RJ. I don't like it. Similarly, when information doesn't coincide with facets of our programming, we reject it and often get triggered. Who, me? Maybe the same person whom you hold a negative belief about just did something considered kind. Don't like that. That new information will cause cognitive dissonance because it doesn't coincide with your programming, which are your beliefs. One or the other must then be rejected. Damn, I feel so called out. Either way, you are trapped within duality. Thought comes from beliefs and is filtered through the ego identity, while inspiration is born directly of sentience. And man, think, let's take a second. Let's take a pause real quick. When you're thinking, it feels a certain way in your body. But when you're inspired, totally different feeling in your body. It, you don't even feel your body because it just feels natural, you know? I'm pausing because I need water, but I also am pausing because you should just think about that for a second. Thoughts come from beliefs and is filtered through the ego identity. The direct misalignment, direct alignment with the sentience is what's known as being in the zone. Ideas are flowing to the person without any filtering, critiquing, or any other mental interference. A new solution for any problem or challenge is an example of this. The ego, the identity is the ego. The ego is the mind. The mind is thought itself. And thought is simply movement of the past, which is fed by beliefs, concepts, and ideologies that you picked up along the way. You know, I could have grown up in a household where my parents drilled in me, I don't know, let's say Jesus thinks you're bad if you're gay. They didn't drill that into me. They drilled a lot of other stuff into me, but that wasn't one of them. And I could believe that because my parents told me. I'm a kid. My parents are telling me stuff. I don't know how to get money or to take care of myself or to cook food. They do. So they must know what's right. And that's why when we're kids, we're just getting tricked left and right. Okay. And it's not until you're in your 20s where you go, is something fucked up? I feel like the thing that I've been told to believe isn't true. And then you ignore it. And then in your 30s, you have a mental breakdown in public and it gets real embarrassing. And then you're like, oh, maybe I need to reexamine my entire life. Cute. Even if we imagine a future, it is always based upon the past. There is no self-healing when one dwells in the past or projects it into the future. All your power is in reclaiming your energy that your egoic identity has hijacked. So that's a very important thing that he just said. We spend too much of our energy every day. You wake up with a gas tank full of gas and that gas gets used throughout the day. We are all walking around using most of our gas in our gas tank to back up the bullshit that our ego feeds to us. Over-identifying with things. I'm a comedian. I'm a woman. I'm a comic. I'm a podcaster. I'm sentient. Okay. Next time someone tries to tell you who you are, bitch, say, nah, I'm sentient. And then they'll be confused. And then you just walk away. Who cares? You know, you don't have to finish the conversation. This occurs while fully experiencing the freedom and limitlessness built into every moment. The egoic identity is simply a construct that continually pushes the limitations of the past forward rather than experiencing the only reality that authentically exists. Now, what is fresh, finite possibilities? Okay, two more pages, y'all. The limitations of the so-called knowledge. Oh, you know what? Actually, I just want to read this one because then the rest of it I want to read for the Patreon because I looked at the timer. Already doing 50 minutes, okay? We're going to do an under an hour episode, guys. So I'm going to tell you, I'm going to give you a preview of the steps that he's going to go into further. That's the stuff I'm going to read on the Patreon because it's like, you know, 10 pages. So step one, shortcuts to dissolve the ego mind identity. These practices will act as shortcuts to help you dial down the ego mind. Sign me up for that. How we live is how we die. They will help you to drop away from your beliefs and instead enter into your natural harmonious state. Well, that sounds fucking nice. Part of this practice involves self-inquiry. Self-inquiry is a direct and powerful way to dissolve what has gotten in the way of the self. When the fire of self-inquiry is burning, stoke that flame, baby boy. It will burn away everything that you are not. In the beginning, do the following four exercises as outlined precisely here. And this is just summing them up. And then he's going to go into each one individually and give very specific examples. But step one, ask yourself, who am I? Do it right now, real quick. Pause it. Just say, who am I? Say it out loud. I fucking dare you. Okay. Step two, fingers to your chest. So your pointer finger and your index finger and your middle finger into your chest. Step three, imagine you are a pair of eyes floating in space. So you got to close your eyes for that one because it's hard when you're seeing. But I've done this before and it fucking works. It's very potent. And he'll get into more specifically how to envision this. But just imagine, close your eyes and imagine you are two eyeballs where your two eyeballs actually are. And you're just floating in space, just two eyeballs walking around. Why not? You know? And then step number four, say, I don't know. So it's ask yourself, who am I? Put your fingers to your chest. Imagine you're a pair of eyes floating in space. And then respond by saying, I don't know. Do each exercise for 5 minutes individually, three separate times a day. Once upon waking, once before lunch, and once again before dinner or going to sleep. These protocols are effortless and increase your usage as much as you like. So I'm going to read on the Patreon the last like five chapters or five pages of this chapter that go into these steps. But I want to give you one thing before I leave. This is a cool one. Don't do it while you're driving. We do any spreadsheets. We need any treadmill. He taught this in the book and I did it and I was like, holy shit. And then I had my boyfriend do it while he was working on something. He was really frustrated editing something. And I told him like to pause and do the thing that I'm about to tell you. And he looked different afterwards. It was really cool. So your heart chakra is in the center of your chest. I used to think it was like basically in between your nipples, but apparently it's like below your clavicle, above your tits. So the center of your chest. So put your pointer finger and your middle finger onto the center of your chest. Close your eyes. But if you're driving, do not close your eyes. Okay. Don't want that on my conscience or for you in your life. But hey, if you get paralyzed, you know how to heal yourself. don't get paralyzed. So put your fingers, two fingers in the center of your chest and close your eyes and just feel the sensation of those two fingers on your chest. Just concentrate on that. Now, reach deep from inside yourself and touch your two fingers from inside yourself. And imagine your heart chakra opening up when you do that. Oof, I just did it. It's fucking, it's potent, I gotta say. And you could do that to any chakra. So he also talks about doing it to your crown chakra, which is the very top of your head in the center, putting two fingers on the top of it, closing your eyes, taking a second. You might not feel it right now because I'm walking you through it in a little bit of a manic way, but do it on your own after you listen to this episode. Put your two fingers on the very top of your head, close your eyes, just focus on the sensation of your two fingers at the top of your skull and then deep from within yourself, touch from the inside those two fingers on your skull. You will feel the energy around that chakra open up. It's wild. Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. Guys, we did it. We did it. We're here. We're not using anger in place of courage. We're going to be brave and we're not going to throw board games and we're not going to get butt hurt and we're going to try our best every goddamn day. Okay. Some of us were given the tools and some of us weren't, but that's okay. That's why you're here. And yeah, thanks for being here, guys. Congratulations. I'll talk to you next week.